Today we are going to talk in our chapter 5 about the flow perspective. Now understand what this entire thing is going to be. There's going to be when it comes to an information system or any system. There's how the user navigates the screen and how the data flows at the back end. So normally as users, we just see the front end, but we also as technical teams need to understand how the back end also works. So there are a couple of diagrams and references that will help us with all that information, which we're just going to look at. So what are we going to talk about is what is a flow perspective? So an introduction to it, diagramming tools which we can use for flow perspectives, activity diagrams, how do we draw an activity diagram of an order management system. So we learn how to draw the activity diagram, and then we'll also see an example to learn how we can implement it in real life scenarios. Where can we use activity diagrams? Then after activity diagrams, we have data flow diagrams. So like I said, the activity diagram will have to do more with how the user navigates the screen. When the data flow diagram has to do more with how the data is flowing in the system. So symbols and notations used in data flow diagrams. What are the data flow diagram rules, the different levels and the layers. How do you create a data flow diagram and the types of different data flow diagrams that we have. Then we have something called as process charts and the symbols that we'll use in process chart. Finally, at the end, we'll come to business process modeling notation, so which is also called as BPMN. We will study the business process modeling hierarchy, 5 tips to master the art of business process modeling, and finally, the end of our chapter. Okay. So now let's understand a definition of the flow perspective. So a business flow perspective involves studying how work or business processes are carried out within an organization. It entails analyzing the sequence of activities involved in completing a specific task. It involves analyzing the flow of information between the tasks. It also involves studying the dependencies between the tasks. By studying the business flow perspective, analysts can gain a better understanding of the 4 functions and processes required for the business. By studying the business flow perspective, analysts can identify any issues or inefficiency that may be present in the current workflow. Okay, so the first line is pretty much self-explanatory, where we say a business flow perspective involves studying how work or business processes are carried out within an organization. So when I'm studying the business, I would want to know how the entire organization works. And this might come either through a document analysis or probably through observation, where you see how people are working. If I have a process, how is that process flowing? Is it only going through one department? Is it going through multiple departments? Is it going through multiple people? Going through multiple people within each department? How does the entire process work? Now, also within that, when we are looking at the process, so every process is going to be divided into a set of smaller activities, which complete the entire process as and how it works. So now, after you have a general idea or the macro level idea of the entire process, you would want to go and study the various sequences that are there behind completing each task. Again, within the task, you would have some information flowing or some information getting passed on to one another or to people who are dependent. So how is the flow of information happening? Is it going through a common system? Am I pushing it directly? How exactly is that flow taking place? It also involves studying the dependencies between the tasks. So we understand which task is dependent on the other, which task can be done independently without dependencies on the other. So it is as simple as saying that if I use an app like Amazon to place my order, the UI that I look at and the background, where there are multiple retailers and the payment has to go to a specific retailer, the order maybe has to go either to the retailer or to the Amazon delivery station, depending where the product is placed, because there are some retailers even on Amazon who do not keep the products with them, though they would require the payment, but they would keep the goods at the Amazon warehouse. So Amazon would take the task of delivering those items. So when I place an order, there would be two paths. One where the billing would go maybe through a deduction system, or Amazon would deduct whatever charges it has and pass it to the retailer on a timely basis, or and to the warehouse where actually the product is placed so that they can dispatch the product. By studying the business flow perspective, analysts can get a better understanding of core functions, processes required for the business. When I'm specially working on a business analysis project that is within an organization, I'm going to look at maybe changing some process or involving a new innovation. Then this becomes very critical because I want to understand how the entire organization works, especially if the stakeholders are a part of that system and how exactly do they function, what are the processes that they need to follow. Are these processes something that I would need to incorporate into my system and all of that? By studying the business flow perspective, analysts can identify any issues, any vision that may present in the current workflow. A flow perspective will also give me ideas if I study it, that is there something that I can do to make the system better, improve the process, suggest a new business analysis project. That's what it talks about. That means how can I generally improve the efficiency of the project? Now, what are the levels? The study of flow can be done at four levels. What are the four levels? Workflow level, data flow or information level, broad process level, service level. So now the study of the flow is done at four different levels. So up to four flow perspective has four different levels that you probably need to look at. The first level that we have to talk about is probably the workflow level. Then the next is the data flow or the information flow level. The third is the broad process level. And finally, the service level. So now let's look at each one of these levels individually. When I talk about the workflow level, what does it do? Traces actual work done, perhaps from desk to desk. Workflows involve work instructions, rules, routes, and roles for people. So I guess this would be a very funny example to take, but if you see a government organization, you would get a very distinctive idea about the workflow level. So especially when I talk about desk to desk, you would see so many people sitting across, and then they would pass you from one department to another, over from one hierarchy to another, and you would all normally see the pews giving out files from one desk to another, showing the route or the rules that need to be followed when it comes to that. Yeah, people at government office work a little differently, but yeah, if you want to study the workflow level, that is probably the best place where you can study the workflow and understand how the desk-to-desk work is done, how the rules, routes, and roles for the people are followed. The second one, now let's come down to the data flow or the information flow level. What does that talk about? Data flows or information flows are studying using data flow diagrams. So DDFD that we have been talking about previously in the summary and the agenda for today. Data flow diagrams focus on processes and the flow store and information of data or information. Data flow diagrams do not imply sequence of execution or timing. So what does the data flow diagram tell me? It is basically nothing like the name suggests. It is basically studying how your data is flowing, or if I have to say, how the information is flowing. So like I said, the focus is there is more on the processes and the flow, the store and the transformation of data information. So it is what we were talking about another way, that when I place an order maybe on Amazon, now there are two options. Either the product is with the retailer or it is with Amazon lying there currently. So once I make the payment, at the back end, my job is done. I have navigated and I have ordered the product I need to. Now at the back end, which is the data flow or the information flow, what is happening is the seller is informed or the retailer is informed that this order has been placed and this is the amount that has been taken. On the other hand, the billing and the warehouse would be informed that this is the product, this is the address that needs to be passed on, and this is how the payment has been made, or this is a cash on delivery and this is how the payment needs to be made. One thing what the data flow diagram does not do is what is written in the last sentence, if you have read it, it does not imply sequence of execution or timing. So my data could be flowing in any format. It is not representative of the what is the sequence in which it will execute or what is that amount of time that would be required. Now let's come to the broad process level. What does the broad process level tell me? The broad process level studies use higher level process mapping tools such as business process modeling notation, which we talked about was BPMN or activity diagrams. Broad process level studies focuses on broad steps with sequential broad process with sequential step, decision situations and loop steps. Now something very simple that I place the order and or I cancel the order and I came back. So that is how it would happen. So it would have steps like have you placed the order, yes or no? Has the payment has been made, yes or no? If it is not, then how will it all work? We'll look at various examples also for this. And when we drew the activity diagrams, we'll understand how, based on that example, our activity diagrams are drawn. Last is your service level. Service level studies focus on an end-to-end service being delivered by a business. Services may be tangible, intangible attributes and a service level agreement or a SLA. Services leverage one or more processes to ensure delivery. Service analysis methods include service blueprinting and drawing service scope. So for a service level agreement or a SLA, I will take again the example of Amazon. That means whenever you're placing an order or looking at a product, it will tell you that this is when tentatively it will be delivered based on obviously the location that you select. Like if you have multiple of locations or if you stay in a different city, your parents stay in a different city and you're trying to get goods delivered to your friends, your parents, and the service level agreement will tell you based on the address or the PIN code that you have selected. So it will tell you when is it going to be delivered. That is what a service level focuses on. So it focuses on end-to-end service being delivered by a business, maybe tangible or intangible, and a service level agreement. Services leverage one or more processes to ensure delivery. The multiple things which can ensure delivery, and service analysis methods include service blueprinting and drawing service scopes. So this is what we call a flow perspective or an activity diagram. Now you can see, so there can be swim lanes where processes are carried out in parallel. Now if you see over here, department A is separate and department B Department B and C have parallel processing, and at the end, and department A works on its own processes. So basically department B and C have a very similar process flow, and at the end you have a synchronized. Also, if you notice the shape of these boxes, they are more like decision boxes. We will talk about them later, but just keep in mind the image that we have just spoken about. So the activity diagram. So what is an activity diagram? Ideal for detailed workflow analysis and understanding process logic, activity sequence and timing. It is activity diagram is a unified modeling language or a UML. We spoke about UML, I think, in chapter 3 or 4. It used to represent, mainly chapter 4, the flow of activities in a system. So when I see something like this, I know how the hierarchy works, how the work gets transferred from one person to another. And that's exactly why I'm trying to represent it diagrammatically rather than writing it down. Understand, putting a diagram wherever you can will simplify things for you as a business analyst. And how much ever you can use, though not in all places, wherever you can use UML, try using UML, because it might take maybe 2 pages of words to draw a diagram, which probably will take half a page to do the same thing. Okay. So what are the key features of using an activity diagram? We understood what is an activity diagram. So it helps you understand process logic, activity sequence, and timing. Understand that we get the timing from the activity diagram. So how do the various boxes work? So use the simple symbols as activity versus, decision diamonds, sequential flows, flow loops, and parallel flows, which are also known as swim lanes. So that's what we were saying. This that you see, that parallel flow between department B and C is what is called a swim lane, because they have parallel processes and the same processes. Then multiple parallel processes can be created in activity following the representation of real life workflow situation where multiple departments or activities are involved. So even though I might have multiple departments, the kind of work they might do might be the same, and so they can have parallel processes. So over here, the beauty of this diagram is that if I have a fourth department, department D, which has the same workflow as department B and C, I can put another parallel process or a swim lane over here. Activity diagrams enable synchronization of these parallel flows, bringing in sequence, timing, dependence to understanding of the process flow. I can even have process flows to understand whether this data would go here, how are these two connected, is there a flow of data from one department to another, or maybe somewhere here, is there a flow, or you're just finally, there's a third, fourth or fifth department that is just collating the information at the end. Okay, so in an activity diagram, the example of an activity diagram is shown in slide number 10, which we saw previously, which includes parallel tracks or swim lanes to show activities done in each department. Now, so this is obviously, this is slide number 10, which we have been referring to, and this is the image. Activity diagrams can include decision boxes like a conventional flowchart to represent decision making in the process. So as of now in this, we don't see any decisions. We just see the process flow that is happening. But I can have decision boxes here, which will help me if in case there is a decision that is pending, and post that my flow will go. A decision box would be something that would represent, is it approved, not approved? Maybe there is an approval process. So is it approved, not approved? If it's not approved, what is the flow that needs to be done? If it is approved, what is the flow that needs to be done? Mostly when it's not approved, you will need have a loop flow where you'll need to go back to a particular stage. A distinct advantage of activity diagrams over conventional flowcharts is the ability to create multiple parallel flows, allowing the represent of complex workflow and process situations. So even if I have 10 departments and they have different workflows, or they have same workflows, so out of that maybe 5 have the same workflows, then I can still create those parallel workflows. I can show the connection between different workflows. If there is a very complex situation where information, like we discussed, a government organization where information is flowing, or data is flowing from one department to another, I can put all of that very easily in a activity diagram. So no matter how complex your workflow or the process seems, I can depict it in a activity diagram. Activity diagrams enable the understanding of inherent process logic, sequence of activities, timing, making them useful for analyzing business processes in detail. So once I have the activity diagram ready, it will become very easy for me to understand how the entire sequence of events and the process logic works. Okay, so how do we draw an activity diagram? Now that we know what is an activity diagram, what are the various components, how can we use it to understand the business process logic, let us now work on drawing an activity diagram. So activity diagrams serve as a flowchart for system activities. So a lot of us, when we learn computer logic or any logic, we draw flowcharts. So it's going to be very similar to that. The only thing, it might have a lot of parallel flows together. They differ from, as they have various additional capabilities. That's right. So it's one level above a flowchart. These additional capabilities include branching, parallel flow, and swim lanes. So ideally, you will not have branching in a normal flowchart. The only branching you'll have is when you come across a decision box. But here, that would not be the case. Like we saw, we can have department-wise branching. We can have swim lanes or parallel lanes for various departments. The key component of an activity diagram is the activity itself, that what is the activity that is being done. Activities represent functions performed by the system. To draw activity diagram, we need the following activity: the activities, the associations between the activities, the conditions for the activities. Is there any condition involved? This could be a completely optional parameter. And also, what are the constraints that you need to look at? So, what are the limitations of the entire activity? Okay, so how do we understand this? Like I said, during when we saw the agenda, that we are going to basically draw the activity diagram of an order management system. So if you see over here, the start of process comes over here, which is customer sends a order request. Now what is happening over here? So now these boxes that you see with curved edge, curved corners are boxes which represent activities. So you see customer sends an order request. This arrow becomes your association. Order request system confirms the receipt of the order. That means I have received the order. Check if the no order is normal. So maybe in another system, I can also have a order request, and I can have a decision box here, which will say is the product available or not available, or how is the delivery supposed to take place. So you have C. Check if the order is normal deliverable. So here I come with the decision box or the condition check. Now here I have branching taking place, which says no. Check if it is a special order, yes and no. Even if it's a normal order or a special order, both come to confirm the order. No over here also results in termination. And once I confirm the order and the order is dispatched, it again results in termination. You will probably need to, if there is an option, you will also need to put a confirmation that the person order has been received by the customer. Where to use activity diagrams? Modeling workflow by using activities, modeling business requirements. What is the requirement of the business? How can I understand? High level understanding of the system's functionality. How exactly is my system working? If I'm looking at a maybe a new IT system or a new process system, then how exactly does that work? So especially when we have an activity diagram, we can mostly use it where I need to investigate things, I need to understand how the system is working and have a high level. I may not have a macro level, micro level understanding of all the system's functionalities, but it will give me a high level view of how it is. Also, when I'm modeling something that has to do with the business requirements, I can easily do that with the workflow, the activity diagram. So investigating business requirements at a later stage, that's what we can do. Okay, so this is now, we till now we were doing activity diagrams. Now let's look at data flow diagrams. So where does it start? It starts over here, where I have any. Do you have any suppliers? No. Send no to suppliers. Yes. Send RFQ, receive quote, add quote. So basically, I want to get some goods from the suppliers. This is an example of that, where the first decision box says, how do I contact the supplier? I send the request for proposal or request for quote. RFQ stands for request for quote. When we saw earlier in the previous chapter, RFP, which is request for proposal. Then you receive the quote and you add the quote. So now this that you see in the larger bracket is going to be repeated for each and every suppliers. So if there are five suppliers, I'm going to send the RFQ to each supplier individually, get quotes from them individually, and add the quote. So intermediate even for a timeout and time limit exceeded, marker showing that the sub process loops. So this is what we spoke about. This is how you would indicate a sub process loop. And then you have find optimal code. So once you've received all the codes, you would find the optimal code and that would be the end. But then you also have a box here which is says time limit, whether it was acceded or not. So if you have some supplier which has received the RFQ but has not sent you the code, even within the time limit that was mentioned, then you would not include him in this process loop. You would just include for the optimal code. So after 5 suppliers, if 4 suppliers have sent me the code, I would only be looking out for the codes or deciding my optimal code from those 4 codes. So data flow diagrams or DFDs. Data flow diagram depict the flow of information in a process or system. They use symbols like rectangles, circles, arrows with text labels to show the data. Inputs, outputs, storage points and routes. DFDs range from simple hand-drawn overviews to multi-level diagrams that can reveal how data is handled. They can analyze an existing system or model a new one. So, when I want to depict the flow of information in a process or system, I will use a DFD or a data flow diagram. Now, what will we use in this? A lot of rectangles, a lot of circles, arrows. So, if you see, we have here a decision box, then we have rectangles. We don't have circles over here. And this text labels to show what is the exactly the information that is flowing. So show data, inputs, output, storage points and routes. Okay, so I can draw a very simple diagram in case it is not very complicated, or if I have multi-level data being flowed and data being in different loops, then I can have a multi-level diagram to show that how that data is handled. And I can use it to analyze the existing system, or I can even use it to model a new one. So if I'm designing like a new process or a new system, IT system, then I can use this to even model a new one. DFDs visually communicate information that can be difficult to explain in words. Like I said, I probably will need about 2 to 4 pages just writing this down, and I can do it in a simple diagram. They appeal to technical and non-technical audiences, from developers to CEOs. Not many people want to read 10-page documents, so they would. And 10-page documents, you can tend to miss out on details. So here, what do? You basically just summarize everything into a diagram showing the technical team as to this is how your data is flowing. So they can model or build the system accordingly. And even for non-technical or your CEOs, it becomes very clear to for them to understand what is happening and where their intervention is required. However, they may not be suitable for visualizing interactive real-time or database operated of software or systems. Then it would become very difficult. If there is a lot of interaction, dynamic thing happening, everything in real time, then probably having a data flow diagram might not make sense. You might be able to use it or you might not be able to use it. DFDs model the flow of information and activities that process it, making them easily understood. So that's what we've seen, how the activities are happening, what is the flow of information, where is it going from one place to another. They provide a graphical representation of the system accessible to both computer specialist and non-specialist users. This is also what we were talking about the previous slide. DFDs enable effective collaboration between software engineers, customers and users during analysis and specification of requirements. So when I have a DFD or a data flow diagram, it is easier for the users to understand the requirements that they've mentioned and whether that requirements are being added or not being added. Also, it becomes a very clear thing for your customers and your software engineers to understand how exactly they have to create the backend system. A limited set of constraints and simple rules applies to all DFD, making them easy to follow. These same constraints and rules apply to DFDs used in different software process activities. So obviously, there are going to be some constructs, some rules that need to be followed, and we are going to look at that. Even during the software process activities, the rules and constructs will apply. So obviously, when you're building, having a proper data flow diagram, there's going to be something that will you will need to keep in mind. Purpose of a DFD: IT professionals and system analysts use DFD to document and show user how the data moves between different processes in a system. That's what we saw right now, that we are trying to understand how the supplier system works or the supply chain works when I need a product to be ordered. Analysts begin with an overall picture and then move to the finer details of each process. So I can start at a macro level and then go down into a micro level. DFDs offer a graphical representation of how system information moves between processes in a system. DFDs follow a hierarchy, meaning a diagram can contain several layers unique to a specific process or data function. So I might also not only consider a hierarchy, I might look at things from a macro level, then move down into layers to get to the micro level of each process and try to understand how the entire data function works. So that's what we just spoke about, where we say that each layer in a DFD represents a different level of detail. DFDs help identify potential bottlenecks, inefficiency in a system's data flow. DFDs can use to be analyze existing systems or model new ones. Now understand that when I'm going through multiple layers in the hierarchy, what is going to happen? It will start giving you from a macro level. I might not be able to see the inconsistencies, inefficiencies, or the bottleneck in the system. But as I move down into the data flow system, I would obviously know that what is going right, what is going wrong, and I can use it to either modify the existing system or develop a completely new system altogether if that's feasible. Data flow diagrams are a very important tool for software engineering for a number of reasons. What are the reasons? We're just going to look at the system scope and boundaries are clearly indicated on the diagrams. Decomposing high-level data flow diagrams provides an overall view of the complete system and a more detailed breakdown of the individual activities. This technique is used for clarification, understanding, and identifying potential issues in the system. So when I draw a DFD, I am clearly defining what my system is going to do or what my system is doing. It does not tell you anything less or anything more. It is a very precise, which defines the boundaries of your system. Also, like I said, we can have a high level data flow where I look at the entire organization or the flow at a higher level. And then what I can do is break it down into sub levels to understand individual activities, individual flows. So I can start with a organization tree structure and break it down further. Use for clarification, understanding, and identifying potential issues in the system. When you go break down to individual activities, you start seeing the problems in the system. So what are we in the previous slides, we said that when it comes to data flow diagrams, there's particular notations that needs to be used and all of that. So the notations are now named after their two creators, which is Jordan and Code and Jordan and DMacro. Gain and Sarso. Jordan and Code, or Gain and Sarso, define different visual representation for processes, data stores, data flow, and external entities. So there are certain notations or certain diagrams that are different in both the system, and that is how it's worked. We will see that. So this is what we are going to talk about, where process in Gain and Sarso is depicted with a a rectangle with rounded edge, rounded corners, while in Jordan and Cord it is represented with a circle. Okay, so Jordan and Cord DFTs are typically used for system analysis and design, while Gain and Sarso DFT are more commonly used for visualizing information system. Both might be the same, so you can use which you want as per your convenience, but So if I'm doing more of a system or a process analysis, then I would prefer using Jordan and Cord. And if I'm looking more at an information system or a data flow, then I'd probably use a GAN and SASO. The primary visual difference between the two notation is the shape used for the processes that we just showed, I spoke about, and I showed it to you all. Jordan and Cord use circles, while GAN and SASO use squares with rounded corners, sometimes called lozenges. So data flow diagrams use four symbols to illustrate the movement of data in the system. So this is what we had spoken about. So you can see this, and you can see this. You can also see the data store would depict it slightly differently. Also, when it comes to the rectangle, you can see here there's a clear indication of the version number and the process, while here both are combined. Data flow diagrams use four symbols to illustrate the movement of the data. Squares to represent external entities, which are sources and destinations of data in the system. So those are your starting and endpoint, which I will use do using squares. Arrows are used to indicate data flow. How the data is moving from one to another is what I will do using arrows. Open-ended rectangles are used to represent stationary data sources. So data sources which are not dynamic and are in one place will be done using open-ended triangles. So if you see over here for the data store, the rectangle is open from this end in both of them. That indicates a data store. Rounded squares are used to indicate transformation or manipulations to the data. That means there is something being done there which will manipulate the data or change the data to a more required format.